Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at dukehealth.org.
This is Tested from WUNC, a look at how we're responding to the day's challenges in North Carolina and the South. I'm Charlie Shelton Ormond. Today, we're bringing you a special episode. It comes from our politics podcast at WUNC. It's the first episode in a series on something that takes place every 10 years, redistricting. WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief and host of the Politics Podcast, Jeff Tabiri, will be unpacking this often complex process and what it means for folks in North Carolina for the next few episodes. Here's part one of the series, Behind the Lines.
We'll call this meeting to order. Welcome everyone here tonight.
Throughout September, North Carolinians gathered 13 times at college campuses across the state. The location for each meeting was unique, but the reason for the forums remained the same, no matter where you went. From Mecklenburg County,
stop permitting your fears to continuously weaken your confidence in healthy democratic values and principles.
To Pitt County in the East.
To me, it's like putting the cart before the horse. Why have a hearing not knowing where the maps are going to be drawn?
Jackson County out West.
We are a purple state. Our representation in D.C. and Raleigh should reflect that. Aren't our elected officials supposed to represent all of the people in their districts, not just those who voted for them?
To Alamance in the Piedmont.
My message from my neighborhood to y'all is you're being watched.
All these people came together to talk about one thing. It's wonky, it's a mouthful, and it's the ultimate exercise in cultivating political power. Redistricting.
When you make the process about your party, democracy loses. The people lose.
Every 10 years, legislators are required to draw new political districts for the U.S. House and North Carolina General Assembly. Redistricting takes place at state capitals across the country. The idea is that representation should mirror population shifts. Some states, like ours, gain representation in the U.S. House, whereas others, with a drop in residents, like New York, are losing a seat. The U.S. Census provides the data for this process. Once new population figures are determined, it's time for elected officials to get to work. And the new maps have significant ramifications, from the mountains to the coast to Capitol Hill.
The stakes are huge.
This round of redistricting is scheduled to take place throughout October, and really, the next decade. While the new districts will be approved well before Thanksgiving, we think, the legal challenges and criticism will last for years.
It was technologically diabolical what they did.
We were the poster child for mistakes that you can make in redistricting based on race.
But what exactly constitutes a fair map? Why has self-sorting by Democrats and Republicans made gerrymandering easier? And is there any reason to believe reform could help or even come to North Carolina? For the next few episodes, we will try to answer those questions along with many others as we embark on a special series all about the history and weight of redistricting. This is Behind the Lines.
Good evening. My name is Amanda Williams, and I'm here because I want you to know that fair voting maps are important to me.
In late September, Amanda Williams joined more than 100 others in a room on the campus of Fayetteville Technical Community College. She stood up at the microphone and got right to the point.
Frankly, I don't trust you with the process, regardless of your party.
Williams has been a North Carolinian most of her life. She grew up in Harnett County, and after spending some time in the Maryland, D.C. area, has now lived in Fayetteville for nearly 15 years. She's a political observer who has hardly been impressed by the districts drawn by Democrats or Republicans.
Neither party has done right by the citizens when they have used gerrymandering for their own personal gain. We know your job is not easy, and some of the decisions you make will not be liked by all. As an educated and engaged voter, I expect you to leave your party alliance at the door when you sit to the table to work for all voters.
Now remember, Republicans hold majorities in both chambers of the state legislature. And when they establish new districts this fall, they will aim to create favorable districts for themselves at the state level for the next 10 years. It's also worth noting that redistricting is not subject to a veto. This is purely an exercise of the legislative branch. Additionally, state lawmakers are going to have to create an entirely new congressional district, the state's 14th. And while it might be natural to wonder how important is one out of 435 U.S. House seats, don't forget that Democrats in Congress hold a very narrow advantage. North Carolina's redistricting effort is part of a national puzzle where Republicans control two-thirds of all state legislatures. Another GOP seat here, an additional red constituency over there in Texas, and this redistricting process gives Republicans an even better chance at taking back the U.S. House. North Carolina's 14th congressional seat arrives after nearly a million North Carolinians did since 2010. It's the urban, deep blue counties with the most population growth, but lawmakers could draw the seat elsewhere, as they see fit. Even if this runs counter to what Amanda Williams and some of the folks in Cumberland County think makes the most sense.
The Sandhills deserves its own congressional district, centered on the Sandhills.
The logical thing is this area right here where you have a mixture of people.
We are a distinct geographic location and population center with the honor of hosting the largest active duty military population in the United States.
Give us what you have the power and the authority to do. Create a Sandhills Congressional District. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McKellen.
These constituents describe their predicament as having been gerrymandered. Yes, probably the most notorious term linked to redistricting, named in honor of former Massachusetts Governor Elbridge Gerry. In practice, gerrymandering is drawing oddly shaped districts that maximize power for one political party and diminish the voice of others. While there are limitations to this practice along racial and even some partisan lines, this is a legal tool of manipulation used for more than two centuries.
This evening, I really spoke my piece by saying, look, you're all we have right now. We don't have an independent commission of citizens and of elected officials. All we have is you.
Currently, the Sandhills are separated into three congressional districts, with each seat held by a Republican. There's the 7th district, which stretches from the coast, Oak Island and Southport, up into Johnston County. Then there's the 8th district, which looks like a 90-degree right angle, from Cumberland, heading west to Cabarrus County. And the 9th. That stretches along the southern border, from Robeson, west to Union County, outside Charlotte. The new 14th district is going to influence every region across the state, to varying degrees. Could it sit in or near Charlotte? Perhaps closer to the Triangle? Maybe in the Fayetteville neighborhood? Will the Sandhills be split even further, or become more cohesive? Amanda Williams isn't exactly holding her breath.
I'm just going to wait and see. I really hope that they listen to the people, because I think the overarching concern is that they be fair and they make sure that they draw those maps with transparency.
Williams' skepticism is valid. North Carolina has long been home to legal battles over redistricting, especially in the last 10 years. Republican-drawn maps have been ruled unconstitutional in state and federal court, forcing multiple unscheduled rounds of redistricting with the aim of more fair or less egregious districts. In a state that is evenly divided politically, at one point in recent years, Republicans held 10 out of 13 congressional seats and 35 of 50 state Senate seats. That might not seem fair, but what is fair? And what does a fair map really look like?
Boy, that's the biggest question.
Michael Bitzer is a politics and history professor at Catawba College. He's been in North Carolina since the early 2000s and has studied Southern politics for decades.
Fair is oftentimes in the eye of the beholder. I liken it to one of the Supreme Court justices talking about pornography. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. And I think for the concept of fairness, it is oftentimes in the partisan eye of the beholder. Now, I think for a lot of people that look at these maps nowadays and think about partisanship, they are seeing the intent to push the envelope to favor one party over the other. And I think in a kind of rational sense, this is probably one of the last bipartisan dynamics that we see in American politics. Both Democrats do it and both Republicans do it. You know, they are intently wanting to not just win seats, but buy an insurance policy that protects them in future elections. And with that dynamic, you've got the voters being very loyal, being very partisan, being sorted into communities that overwhelmingly go for one party over the other. Where do you get fairness out of all those conditions that are already present that have nothing to do necessarily with redistricting, but influence the lines when they are drawn?
The paradox is that even though North Carolina is a relatively competitive state overall, wide swaths of it presently are not. Consider this notable, relatively recent anecdote. In 2004, then-Governor Mike Easley easily won re-election with more than 55% of the vote. The Democrat carried 71 counties and lost 29. Then, just 12 years later, Roy Cooper, a fellow Democrat, narrowly defeated incumbent Pat McCrory. However, Cooper carried only 28 counties and lost 72, but still had more votes overall.
If you take the basic building blocks of drawing maps, which is combining precincts, if you take the dynamics of those precincts and look at how they voted, in 2020, for example, you've got about 2,700 precincts across the state. 70% of them went for one party over the other by 60% or more. So what that tells me as a political scientist is we have sorted ourselves. We have put ourselves into geographic areas that when you start to build the maps and build the districts, it's just a natural affinity that you're going to have some areas that are so overwhelmingly for one party over the other, that how do you get to this level of competitiveness? I think some people would define fairness as being competitive. Okay, well, if you want competitive maps in North Carolina, you are basically going to have to set aside the dynamics and the conditions of other aspects in order to get that. And you're going to have some strange-looking districts because less than 15% of the precincts are competitive, could go one way or the other.
From my perspective, I hear more, maybe I'm hearing more from the right, but I hear more about how self-sorting is adversely affecting Democrats in our state than Republicans. Is that a fair assessment? And if so, why?
It is a very fair assessment, because what we have also done to ourselves, besides being so intensely loyal to one party over the other, is that we also, in terms of our political identity, use that as cultural and quality of life dynamics. And so Democrats are generally tending to orient themselves to urban areas because they like living in those kinds of areas. Republicans are generally more spread out and thus are more prevalent, particularly in suburbia in North Carolina, but also in rural North Carolina. And in looking at how each kind of region plays itself out, Democrats are much more prevalent. They win overwhelmingly the central cities. And when you're designing these districts, unless you are intentionally splitting those central cities into kind of pizza pie shapes to bring in portions of those central cities into various districts, as opposed to the donut hole approach, where you pack all those central city folks together, you're dealing with self-fulfilling prophecies on the ground level, and people wonder why there aren't competitive districts drawn. Folks, the problem is us.
But let's not throw voters completely under the gerrymander bus. At the end of the day, it isn't the voters who draw the lines, it's elected officials. And there have been plenty of strategies used to limit the fairness in establishing districts. Like I mentioned earlier, redistricting is often a wonky, arcane process. So consider this a redistricting glossary with some important terms that you will hear again in this series. First up, a big one. One person, one vote.
So one person, one vote means that if you are in one district and I am in the other district, based on equality of population, the equalness of population between the districts, your vote counts just as much as my vote counts.
So every vote matters, and every vote counts equally.
So the classic example that I use is, if a district has 100 voters and another district has 1,000 voters, the person in the 100 voter district, their vote weighs so much more than the person in the 1,000 person district.
In North Carolina, congressional districts will now consist of more than 740,000 people. Nevertheless, even though they are all approximately the same size, mapmakers have brought out some tools to carve districts in a way that helps their party. Tool number one, packing.
So packing is one of the techniques in the term gerrymandering. And one of the techniques to do that is to pack voters into a district that votes for one party, thereby excluding those votes from surrounding districts that then vote for the opposition.
Okay, so let's picture a pizza, and you've put some tasty pepperonis on there. However, the pepperonis are consolidated on just a quarter of the pizza. You get the pizza slicer out and then decide you don't want any pepperonis. So you just slice that quadrant of pepperonis off as its own one piece. Now you have your wish, your slice of the pie with no pepperonis. Okay, so that's packing. Opposite is cracking.
And instead of putting all of those voters that vote alike together, what you are doing is you are dividing those voters so that their votes don't accumulate and help to elect one of their own. You've basically cracked them among several precincts or several districts in order to prevent them from ganging up and being able to elect one of their own.
Back to the pizza. I know, you're getting hungry. Now, let's say you changed your mind, and you do want some pepperonis, but still mostly cheese. So you cut the pizza in half with a slice right through the clump of pepperonis. Meanwhile, a slice down the middle keeps the pizza or the district, compact.
Compactness is the idea that a district's shape should be fairly uniform or fairly compact so that it's not wildly out of disproportion. The notion is that representatives, state senators, state representatives, members of the U.S. House of Representatives, should be in a district where they can easily traverse and get from one end to the other in a fairly speedy time, in a fairly speedy way. And compactness kind of creates this notion of this is a unique set geographic area that has the representation and the representative knows that area.
So to follow up on that, so I get it, I get compactness. However, compactness and one person, one vote don't always overlap. And the recent example I've been using is as we think about the congressional districts, I'm thinking about congressional districts, if I've got the numbers right, 2 and 3. So 2 is Deborah Ross. She is within Wake County. She doesn't even have all of Wake County. She has 2/3 of it. And she can, by my estimation on Google Maps, she can get between any 2 points in her district in less than an hour, barring Raleigh traffic. Representative Greg Murphy has Camp Lejeune all the way up to Moyock, to Currituck County. It's 4 hours. The fastest way to get from one end to the other is to go outside of the district. And he also has islands and waterways that he has to cross. So compactness is not always achievable.
Correct. And if there's a number one rule in terms of drawing districts, it is one person, one vote. It is equal protection. It is equal population among the districts. And that naturally, because of recent migratory patterns and the increase of population in urban areas, the Deborah Ross, as opposed to rural areas losing population, Murphy's district, you are going to have more coverage of territory, geography in rural districts than you will with urban districts because of that population equality principle.
So we have one person, one vote, packing, cracking, and compactness. Our last vocab term for the day, contiguity.
You wouldn't want to put together 5 or 6 separate circles somewhere and say that is a map for District X or District Y.
That's Dan Blue. He's a Democratic state senator from Wake County.
And by profession, I'm a lawyer who practices in Raleigh.
And during his time in office, Senator Blue has seen many rounds of redistricting in North Carolina.
More than I have fingers, and probably almost as many as I got fingers and toes. I've been involved in some form in redistricting in North Carolina since 1981. For the most part, I've been on redistricting committees that have considered it in North Carolina for the last 35, 40 years.
A lot has changed over those 40 years in the ways lawmakers go about making maps, and by no means is that by their own volition. State and U.S. Supreme Court justices have routinely ruled on redistricting cases, and that has led to stricter parameters around the process. We'll dig more into that history throughout the series. Just know, for now, that intent, like fairness, is somewhat subjective and often rests with the beholder.
The rules have not substantially shifted. The degree to which the rules are obeyed has shifted.
A big rule that did shift came into effect about 20 years ago with a North Carolina court case called Stevenson v. Bartlett. The ruling cemented something called the whole county provision for maps in North Carolina districts.
And that's what we're basically dealing with now, with this concept called clustering, that sort of preset districts that must be drawn by the Constitution. I mean, the Constitution itself, if you apply it, draws the districts by putting whole counties together and putting multiple whole counties together in a district.
The rules just evolved over time, and the Stevenson decision really took away from any legislature, whether it's Democrat or Republican, a lot of the discretion that had been deployed in the past.
On the other side of the aisle, Republican State Senator Paul Newton
representing District 36 and parts of Union and Cabarrus County. He's also co-chairman of the Senate Redistricting Committee.
So that then necessarily, essentially, limits gerrymandering. It creates a protocol, is probably the strongest in the nation, that prevents gerrymandering from occurring.
While there are more rules in place, that doesn't mean gerrymandering has been eliminated. Newton says that due to recent court rulings, lawmakers will not consider political data as one of its official criteria, and he says all maps will be drawn in public view, a change from previous cycles.
Times have changed. Court decisions have changed. And so the big difference, I think, is the transparency with which we're going to be drawing these maps. There should be no one that can say they had no idea what was going on, because maps will only be drawn on computers in public view, live streamed, and they're going to have, we've gotten hundreds of public comments already on an open portal, and we want to hear from the public about the things that they're interested in.
A fair map is a map in which people are able to choose those who represent them. You would try to include communities of interest. That is, you know, similar reference points, similar values, similar goals and aspirations. For example, if you're redistricting at the state level, you'd want to keep as many small towns totally together, if you could, within a district, rather than going down the middle and splitting a town that didn't have to be split.
These communities of interest exist throughout the state, from the mountains to the coast. Although, with increasingly dense populations in urban areas, it is less common for rural Republican communities to be split up. It's easier to crack, divide, and manipulate college campuses and cities, many along the I-40 corridor.
I wanted to make sure that they don't split East Burlington, which is predominantly black and brown communities, you know?
Irving Zavaleta is a longtime resident of Alamance County and is Latinx. He's lived in Burlington for more than 20 years and just moved next door to Graham.
I have learned to love this community. It's small compared to other metro areas here in the state. Now I go to my neighborhood McDonald's and they know exactly what I want, how I love my iced coffees. They care, and we have conversations about life where in other communities that will be bigger wouldn't know. It would have been more of a transactional kind of relationship. So that's why I living here in the county.
This meeting will come to order. Thank you all for being here. My name is Reverend.
In mid-September, Zavaleta joined others in his community and stood in front of lawmakers during Alamance County's public forum on redistricting.
Most of the members in East Burlington are black, Latinx, and working class families. While we are not uniform, we are a community of interest here in the county. Basically, I don't want politicians to dilute the black voting power in East Burlington, and in Burlington in general, in the county, but particularly in East Burlington. We have very specific needs. East Burlington, West Burlington looks completely different. The life expectancy is less. Just the poverty is such, you know. So I don't want a person that represents me that do not live with the realities that we have to face on a daily basis here in East Burlington. I truly hope that you are here because you want to strengthen our democracy. One of the ways you can do that is to avoid packing and cracking historically marginalized communities. People are eager to let their voices be heard, which is really great, you know. That was something that I really value from like hearing other people and their stories and what really matters to them in Burlington.
Change may very well take place organically, from the bottom up. But political power is demonstratively a top-down mechanism in modern-day America. Political districts help to represent the outlines of conflict, like chalk on a baseball field, or the boundary between two nations at war. The lines and each side's position are crucial in waging battle. After Republicans took back the state legislature in 2010, they handled redistricting a year later, enacting new maps that allowed for unified government and virtually unobstructed conservative principles. For 6 years, the GOP held veto-proof majorities. The lines for the next decade, and further policy reforms, culture wars, sparred over by candidates closer to the political fringes, the lines that you will vote on, those lines will be drawn now. Next week on Behind the Lines.
I propose that we draw the maps to give a partisan advantage to 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats, because I do not believe it's possible to draw a map with 11 Republicans and 2 Democrats.
An infamous line deserves a little reflection. We'll put that glossary to work too. Packing, cracking, and stretching the lines as well as the legal limits.
There's no way you looked at a map and didn't realize, oh, this is A&T. Like, oh, this was an accident. Like, no, this was done with serious intent. And we have evidence of that now.
Behind the Lines is produced by Charlie Shelton Ormond. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Thanks for listening.